Hello, everybody. I'm Michael Monaco.
And I'm Bobby Salvis, and we are the Hazmat Guys, bringing you knowledge and insight to make your job a little bit easier and safer.
Let's take a minute to hear about today's sponsors.
Hey, Mike, let me ask you, have you ever heard about the bar method?
Have not, but it sure sounds like fun. What does it mean?
Well, probably not what you think it stands for, but what they mean is blot, apply, and remove. It's the new way to remember the steps to conduct hybrid decon.
Okay, I'm listening.
Well, with the threats continuing to evolve, our SOPs do as well. And First Line Technology introduced us the BAR method. It's backed by science and real-world application. This method of blot, apply, and remove is faster, safer, and more effective method to decon.
Is it going to work for both wet and dry?
Well, yeah, absolutely. The methodology forces you to consider the who, what, when, and where before determining what materials you will be used to carry out the necessary actions. It helps you to tailor your decon to the threats you're facing.
This could be exactly the thing I need to train my team on. How can I get more info?
Well, First Line's EDS kit has everything you need to conduct a hybrid decon for large or small missions. To learn about the kit and how to apply this BAR method, visit www.firstlinetech.com/EDS.
Let's get to the show.
Hey guys, Bobby Salvison here, back from the Hazmat Guys for episode 286. And in this episode, I'm flying solo. Amazing. You can also see this on YouTube. Go to the YouTube channel. Before I get into this one, I want to talk about the conferences. We've worked out a deal with both the Midwest Hazmat Conference, where we'll be presenting a couple of different virtual conference points, and also the Michigan Conference. So by all means, go out there and check out the Michigan Conference. That'll be coming up in early May, and then the Midwest, which almost happens at the same time, put on by our good friends Rick Emery et al. So Mike's off on assignment, which allowed me to pull out an episode that I have had on the ice for probably 2.5 years. It was something that was written after having this conversation with a couple of people, not in my general vicinity and area, but they asked me, in confidence, a couple of questions like, hey, how do you do this hazmat team thing and not go bonkers? And I sat down with a friend of mine who was a psychologist, and we started etching this whole thing out, and it was amazing the similarities that I found within the hazmat community and this syndrome. So what I'll say is we've all been there. You stand at your first or even your 100th roll call or drill, and you get cold sweats. You're thinking to yourself, somebody made a mistake. I'm not even supposed to be here. You're thinking like, I'm in a hazmat team or a company, and everybody here is good at this, and I'm supposed to be too. I've been to the classes. I've been in a company doing hazmat for a little while, but I am way out of my league. So you start questioning yourself, rationalizing, saying, well, this seemed like the next step, but well, maybe you said like, people were like, hey, Bobby, you should go to hazmat. You're smart. And all the while, deep down in our minds, we were thinking, somebody made a mistake. I made a mistake. So you ask yourself, how did I end up with such high performers all around me? And this cycle continues. This thought, along with feelings like fraudulence, self-doubt, come with this. And this feeling sticks around for a while. So if we begin our endeavor with the thought that if I outperform them, I'll keep up. So we play the part. And it's the old, if you can't make it, fake it, right? Maybe you begin to feel that you'll never be able to compete with these guys on skills alone, so we begin focusing on helping bosses achieve their goals. We're going to come back to that in a little while. What we find out is that this is a standard way of dealing with our perceived phoniness. And what I'm describing here is something called imposter syndrome. We didn't make this up. This is a legit psychological syndrome that is more common than you think. It was first brought to light by 1978 psychologists Pauline Clance and Suzanne Imes. The imposter syndrome describes the experience of being unable to internalize accomplishments and persistent fear of being exposed as a fraud. Those who experience these feelings of fraudulence tend to believe that they haven't truly earned their successes that they've achieved. Despite the clear evidence of their intelligence and capability, and instead attribute their success to luck or the ability to deceive people into believing that they're more competent than they actually are. So when you're in a situation, you have this fear of being found out. Surely they've managed to fool a boss into believing that they're actually capable. Then somebody will actually discover the truth about them. Now, multiple studies have shown that imposterism affects both genders and occurs in people from all professions, cultures, and levels of success. Clance later conducted a survey that found about 70% of all people have felt like imposters for at least some part of their careers, while other researchers like Joan Harvey concluded that anyone can feel like an imposter if they fail to internalize their successes. Clance and Imes, who explain imposter syndrome in terms of three central behaviors that come from and even reinforce the imposter phenomenon. The first one is diligence and hard work. The fear of being found out by someone often causes this imposter to work even harder. They put in longer hours, study harder, obsessing over quality of work, or result in strong performance and approval from the bosses. And this accomplishment validates the person and delivers some type of temporary relief from those feelings. The second one is true fraudulence and inauthenticity. In an attempt to avoid these feelings of fraudulence, some people work to game the system around their accomplishments by finding other ways to satisfy the authority figures. For example, they may figure out the opinions the bosses have or bosses like, and then express those opinions to gain the validation. In this behavior, the perceived fraudulence becomes real fraudulence. You give yourself up to be something that you're not. And finally, the use of charm and observation. This strategy focuses on using charisma and perceptiveness. This is like a grifter thing in my mind, like people that, like that TV show, Sneaky Pete. I don't know. It just stuck in my mind. They will be the guy who makes friends with the bosses outside of work in order to get in their good graces. Now, don't get me wrong. Being friends with the boss outside of work is fine. But if it's actually for the reason of having them overlook your shortcomings, then you're doing this. Now, I found this interesting because family backgrounds play a role too. One team of researchers studied the links between parenting styles and imposter syndrome and found that both a lack of parenting care and parental overprotection were linked with high imposter scores. So how do we cure imposterism? There's no real cure. Too bad. You're probably going to deal with this multiple times in your life due to different things that you're involved in. But you can, however, strengthen your ability to cope with it and try to get out from under this rock. So, tip number one, you need to recognize imposterism when it shows up. Whenever a feeling of fraudulence comes up, whether it appears as anxiety or a feeling of not truly belonging, take a moment and notice it. If you don't, it may be something that's getting that bigger than it is and getting worse. As they say in the self-help books, recognition is the first step in fixing the problem. Now, be honest with yourself about it, right? Acknowledge it. If you do this, the false self will not make an embarrassing appearance. If we have nothing to hide, then there's no reason to fake our way through it. I would also like to point out that the feeling isn't always accurate. Sometimes we can feel like an imposter even if we are the real deal. So ask yourself if the feeling is actually an accurate description of reality. Are your achievements really undeserved? Is it an actual possibility that you have conned your superiors into getting this into this company or drill? Is your personality really the only thing that explains your achievements? Can you point to specific pieces of the general positive feedback that you've doubted or denied? And as you really investigate these terms and these thoughts, you'll find out that your fraudulence is a fiction spun from the conditioning of your mind. Now, next, we can discuss your experience with other people. Now, we don't normally do this in our profession, at least. It sets up a perception of weakness, and I can say this actually fits with me very well. When we got here, we felt like we slipped through the cracks, that everybody else are in their spot, and it was only a matter of time for us to find us out. But if you ask the others if they felt the same, I bet they all felt this way too, at one point in their careers, maybe currently. So when there's a feeling, this feeling is actually creeping back in, talk to somebody discreetly that you can trust. Now, we have to measure this a bit in our line of work. It's great to acknowledge and even quietly discuss it with the right person, but it's important to be authentic. But it's also important to be prudent, I would say. Close friends, understanding family and members are ideal people to share your experience with. Each new person you talk to can offer a new perspective. This die has many faces, and the more people you show it to, the more perspective you get. However, I'm always guarded with who I talk to. So I generally talk to maybe 2, 3, 4 people, and that's the end of it. But imposterism researchers have identified 2 dominant beliefs in people who wrestle with fraudulence. First, the people who feel this seem to believe that intelligent, maybe a better word of competent, is a static term. They either have it or they don't. They're either intelligent, maybe in a fixed quantity. And secondly, they think that mistakes are a huge personal failure and inadequacy. Mistakes turn into personalized attacks that you internalize on yourself. So here's a few tips from us. Don't think of the feeling as something that can't change. It's fluid and it's dynamic, and the concept can morph. This is something that can be modified with practice, so you make your mistakes and learn from them. There will be times where you will be firing at your maximum output, and other times you flat out suck. Accept it. It's a growing phase. You can't be awesome all the time unless you're me and Mike. We can do this consistently. This also rephrases mistakes. People believe that a mistake is a huge fault. To make up for this, we need to get approval in other areas, and this is where the fraudulence sets in. So look at mistakes like a gift in disguise. Second, create a sense of self-worth. We have an innate desire as humans to please people. We begin to need validation of other people, and this is your setup for fraudulence. So shift this source of self-worth from others back to yourself. It's your standards that your belief counts in. It's really hard for imposterism to set up when you begin with you. Ideally, you want yourself with self-worth to fall somewhere between what the outside people look at and what you look at. The internal versus the external. That's the sweet spot. Because at the end of the day, the best way to rewrite our fraudulent tendencies is to simply be ourselves and see what happens. Good luck.
Well, that wraps up another episode of The Hazmat Guys.
You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and our YouTube channel at The Hazmat Guys, and take a moment to call our comment hotline at 843-628-1484.
And we are always looking forward to your feedback about information or interesting incidents that you are a part of, so send us a note at feedback@thehazmatguys.com.
Remember, guys, don't just get on the job, get into the job.